Welcome to the Multifamily Deal Lab Podcast, where we dissect a deal before your eyes and ears so you can discover the strategies and tactics that got each deal to the finish line. Strategies and tactics that you can put in your own toolbox to get you to the closing table. From sourcing the deal, raising, due diligence to the property takeover, Multifamily Deal Lab shows how you too can get the deal done. And now here's your host, David Lindahl.
Everybody, welcome to Multifamily Deal Lab. I'm your host, Dave Lindahl. And on this edition, I've got a special guest. His name is Vic Raja. And on today's podcast, we're going to talk about two things. We're going to talk about how he got a deal done during COVID. And we're also going to talk about a certain type of financing he's doing to get more investors into his deals. So Vic, tell everybody who you are and where you're from.
Yeah, absolutely. It's Vic Raja. And
I'm sorry, Vic.
But Raja means king in India, in Hindi, so I'll take that too.
All right.
Yeah, I am a student of Ari Mentor, student of Dave's, but I have no business being here, man. I should be in like an operating room somewhere doing some stents and being in the hospital. But what I've done is over the years, as I transitioned out of just internal medicine and cardiology, I started falling in love with real estate. Started doing single family homes, heard an amazing speech about multifamily and how to invest in apartments and syndications, got into it full force in 2015. And then now, five years later, today we bought our 14th multifamily acquisition, $53 million deal, 368 units in the middle of COVID. And we overraised. We're supposed to raise a $19.3 million raise. We did $21 million. We have to give almost $700,000 of investor money back to, yesterday and the day before.
That's always a nice thing to do because you know that's the first money to go into your next deal, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, we already created a VIP investor list and people are lining up. And our company is Viking Capital. Viking Capital.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we, you know, as a syndicator yourself, as you know, when you're first starting out and it's difficult to raise money and you don't know if the money's actually going to come in on time, you're always trying to create that sense of urgency. So whenever you oversubscribe a deal and you tell people, I'm sorry, you know, the deal's full. I told you, you know, first come, first serve. Those are always the first people going into the next deal. You know, they get their money up the fastest because they lost out on the last one. But so you're into your 14th deal. What's your portfolio size in terms of dollars? How much are you managing?
Right. $350 million of transactions we've done so far. We've sold, out of the 14, we've sold our first five off, but we're holding on to the remaining ones. And we look forward to grow aggressively. We have big goals for 2021. Our goal is to take down eight. So we have one down, seven to go.
Excellent. Good. So let's talk about that deal you did during the middle of COVID. It's actually near the front end of COVID. And you want to talk about that deal, the size, where it was, how much you paid?
So the deal we just did just now was in Atlanta. It's 360 unit, but the one before that.
Actually, you know what? Yeah. You know what, Vic? I'd rather talk about this one now that you just closed one today. I didn't realize you just closed one today, but the one that you did just as COVID was happening was probably most of it was done prior to COVID, but you did one in the middle of COVID. So let's talk about that one.
Yeah, I'll just do a brief soundbite on the one before because so as Dave mentioned, the markets we're in right now is Atlanta, Dallas, Austin, and Washington, D.C. And this deal was our first deal in Washington, D.C. I live in Northern Virginia, D.C. with my partner, Ravi Gupta. And we invest in Atlanta because that's where I grew up. And we know Atlanta very well. And it's a good, obviously, emerging market and a good sort of established market, too. But that deal was a mid-rise, A-class deal. We just happened to get it for a really good discount. And it was a HUD loan that we were assuming 49 units with the exit being a condo conversion. And the main part of the story I want to emphasize is COVID happened right in the middle of the raise. And we were like, oh my God, what the heck do we do? And, you know, we were like sweating bullets. And luckily, you know, we were able to sort of pivot and still go move forward. Now, mind you, before this 14th deal, all our deals we've done has been 5063B. Friends and family, you know, kind of raises. And this was that too. And, you know, normally a $7 million raise is not that a big deal for us, but we struggled to actually get that deal done. And, but then near the second half of when people realize, hey, the world's not falling apart, the people who do have money and the people who don't. And since we're raising essentially mainly from our current investors, there was not really a lack of, it was just people are scared and that we just have to reassure them. And so we did double the kind of marketing, double the webinars, double the investor communications, and we were able to close that deal. And we still overraised on that deal. Again, all 14 deals we've ever done, we've overraised on every single one of them. So now going fast forward, knowing that COVID is not at the end of the world and potentially it's actually the best of things that could have ever happened to multifamily in terms of, look, there's a delta between the treasuries and then the kind of interest rates we're getting and the cap rates, even though the cap rates are compressed. And I know we're all not liking that they're in the fives and the fours or whatever. The rates are so low that it still makes sense. There's still that cash flow that can be generated and then that, you know, that equity that can be created. So that's why we're still doing deals, but we're very cautious. We're building in like all these, you know, I'm a cardiologist, so I stress test the portfolio. So one of the things I do is no rent growth year one, Dave. That's what some of the things you taught me to be, you and Bob Bowman, be very conservative. Other things are, look, if I'm not hitting my cash in cash on year one to pay my investors, I don't do the deal. So these are kind of things we build into our deals to make sure that they still make sense.
Let me ask you a question. So how did you protect yourself from, because a concern that a lot of people have is the fact that people can't evict, you know, at this particular time. So if you get a tenant in there that is not paying, you're stuck with them until the pressure's off. So how'd you protect yourself against that?
In our previous portfolios, we have really good property management companies. We've come up with a lot of different strategies to do that. But moving forward, when we look at deals, we actually look at, hey, how many people are, what's the bad debt situation look like? If it's above a certain amount, we don't do the deal. It doesn't make sense because we don't want to deal with that problem. So a lot of the places we're dealing with the jobs, these are people who work in the industrial sector. They have jobs. They haven't been affected by the COVID. They're not retail oriented. And so there are a lot of pockets in the country where people have jobs and they're doing fine. So that's one thing to look at. Number two, what's your property management company's response to handling bad debt?
Hold on for 1 second. I just want to reiterate what you said, because it's so important when you're buying properties in the middle of this pandemic, is you need to know, you need to go, when you're doing your lease audit, you need to go through the rent rolls and you need to go through those files. You need to look at the applications and see what they're doing, what their job descriptions are, you know, what type of jobs they have, because you're right. There are some jobs that haven't been affected by COVID, and the service sector jobs have been affected by COVID a lot. So if you're taking on a property that has a lot of service sector jobs, even if, you know, the economic occupancy is higher, you know, or high, it still doesn't matter. That's a higher risk property. And you've really got to be conservative with your numbers there. So I just wanted to point that out to anybody that's listening and investing at this particular time. What point number two?
Like the deal we were looking at, it's called Mirabella Place. It's the deal in Atlanta. We did that lease audit, and we actually had another deal under contract before this, but we pulled out of that deal and we actually said, hey, we're not going to do the deal. And to be honest with you, there's some languaging I want to talk about in terms of off-market deals. Sometimes off-market deals are the worst deals to ever do, because if it's not been fully vetted, the brokers haven't really done a proper BOV or created a memorandum, if it's not been seen by the market, sometimes you can get fed a lot of BS from these sort of individual sellers who just want to float it out and see what they can get. So the reason we didn't do that deal was due to the COVID problem. He had hidden all the, he had said, I have 96% occupancy. I'm doing so good. All that. When we did the lease audit, the truth came out. He had put in all these Section 8 folks, and he put all these programs in there. And essentially, it was $22,000 average median income for his property in Atlanta, which that's way below normal. And so once on the surface, the deal looked amazing. We thought we were going to get a deal, but that's so important, the lease audit. And again, if you don't know how to do it, pay a property management company or pay somebody as a consultant to go do it for you, but be there right now, there right next to them, so you can understand what's going on. It can save you millions of dollars, and it can save you from doing a bad deal. But moving forward on this deal, when we did the lease audit here, the average median income was close to about $60,000, which is about $10,000 higher than most places in Atlanta. So that's what we liked. And number two, the jobs, we looked at all the jobs, and they're working in these in the industrial corridor. They were working in these higher paying jobs, and they were not really being affected. And total bad debt on the deal was about 15 units out of 368. And so we felt comfortable with that risk moving forward.
Yeah, good. So the purchase price was how much?
Purchase price was 52.7.
52.7 raised 17. and you had
no, we raised about 19. Yeah.
Oh, 19. And you oversubscribed it. So let's talk about, I just recently heard from Bob that you guys are doing a different kind of an offer for your investors. You want to talk about that?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, as you sort of go up that ladder in the sort of the syndication sort of mastery, you know, we first learn friends and family. That's where the money comes from. And that's what we first, you know, our initial raise was, I think the first ever raise I ever did in 2015 was $700,000, right? I just, a bunch of friends and family come together, raise some money. And that's 5063B, which is great. Now, that's just a self-accreditation by the investor, and they have to fill out their own paperwork and just say that, hey, they are accredited, but there's no proof or verification that needs to be done. And I'm not allowed to market it generally or broadly. I have to just market it to people I already know, I already have a previous relationship with. What we've done is, as these bigger deals come across our plate, it's harder to raise the capital from just that limited group. And so we moved on to what we call 5063C, which is more sort of not, it's a form, I guess, a form of crowdfunding, but it's basically I'm allowed to advertise, I'm allowed to broadcast it out there. However, I have to independently third-party verify every single investor as accredited. I'm not allowed to take sophisticated. I'm not allowed to take anybody who doesn't meet the strict definition of accredited. And what we've done is we've actually upped our marketing game. We have a marketing agency that works with us. I've created a ton of content. We really sort of target niche groups out there. And one of the biggest groups we target is physicians all over the country. And so that has helped us grow our investor base. Now, have I lost investors? Because now my investor has to, not only do they have to do the paperwork, wire the funds, look into the deal, make sure it makes sense. But now after all that, they have to actually do a third-party verification where they submit their tax returns through our online portal and actually get verified. Now, that's sort of a pain in the butt, another annoying thing. But that trade-off was, for every one investor I lost, I probably gained about 5 to 7 investors.
Wow. That's pretty great. You got a 2-tier offer on your deals. I understand. You
absolutely.
That?
Yeah. You know, investors love choice, guys. So when you're out there, not all investors are the same flavor, right? You can have some investors who are younger and they want to grow their portfolio, or they want to create wealth, and they don't mind taking a little bit less cash flow, and as long as they get equity and appreciation on the back end. Then there are older investors who are, you know, they've sort of been there, done that. Now they're just looking for mailbox money, we call it. So they are looking for maybe a higher cash flow. And even if they don't participate in back-end equity profits, they're fine with that, back-end splits. And so what we've done is created a 2-tier offer and created 2 classes of investors, Class A and Class B. Class A gets a straight 10%. It's a 10% IRR, a 10% return paid monthly for an annual 10%. And then they enjoy that for the life of the deal. And when we sell, then they're done. Class B gets 7%, but then they get all the, you know, back-end participation as well. So it seems to work well, because some people do, hey, you know, I like the Malbec and the Chardonnay. I want the blend. I want a little bit of Class A, Class B. Or yeah. They're like, no, I'm a younger guy. I just want Class B because I want to grow my wealth. I want to 2X my money. And then the Class A's are, look, I just want a straight 10%. That's amazing. I'll take that, better than the market.
So just to clarify, those that get 10%, they get no equity on the back end. The 7%ers, they get equity on the back end.
Absolutely.
So So are you taking all of the equity now, since the 10%ers, the Class A's, are not getting any of the back end? Is the all the equity split between you, the general partners and the limited partners at a what's your typical split?
70-30.
So 70-30. So all of that goes into the 10% that might have gone to an A partner, that's not set aside for the general partners?
Yes. I mean, it's split pro rata between the two groups left, Class B and the managers. Yeah.
That makes sense. Have you thought of going into deals, maybe a good micro repositioning that you might have, and then going into a buyout of your investors? I know another investor out there right now that's doing a guaranteed 10%, but then they're buying them out and they're giving them an additional bump of 12%, but no equity, because on the buyout or the refinance, they get the deal back. So now they own the deal with just the bank and themselves.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, deals like, for example, this deal in DC, that may be something interesting. And I may have to declare that up front so the investors know, but this deal in DC is a HUD loan and it's 35-year term. And then we just refinanced to 2.6%. I mean, that's the kind of legacy kind of deal you want to just hold on to for.
Oh yeah, forever. That deal in DC had a lot next to it or something. There was something different about that particular deal. Was it boarded up?
it was built by a developer. It was built as condos, zoned as condos. But yeah. When he did it, when he went ready to sell his condos, it was not a great condo market. So he ran his apartments, but not very well. And so our exit strategy is, I mean, we can always sell it as a multi, but it makes more money if we sell it as a condo conversion. Yeah.
Okay. So what would you say is has been your biggest challenge through the last 5 years?
Staying motivated to stay hungry, learning to reinvest into the company, you know, because a lot of people just, they get a big payday and then they're like, all right, I'm done, or I'm going to start partying, or I'm going to slow down. It's also learning what's the next five moves I need to do to get to the next level. And it's also emulating the best out there, right? I look at what Dave does. I look at what a guy named Joe Fairless does. I look at a guy named, Rod Cleef. I look at whoever's doing the best of the best out there and learning to emulate those things. I hire mentors left and right. I hire the best, like the marketing guy I brought on. He's amazing. And we just keep reinvesting. And then like the book called Traction, right? EOS, yeah. Which, we're hiring a professional EOS implementer to come in and restructure our company. So we're going to be a 10-year company, a 20-year company, a 50-year company, right? The goal is not to just be good for 2 years or 3 years, but how do we replicate success year after year?
Excellent. All right, Vic, do you want to give any contact information?
Yeah, absolutely. If you guys want to get a hold of me, guys, my email is vraya@vikingcapllc.com. I'm also on, Instagram and Facebook, and my website is vikingcapllc.com. So if I could be of help to you guys, please reach out.
Awesome. And that has been another edition of Multifamily Deal Lab. Thanks, Vic.
Awesome, man.
You've been listening to the Multifamily Deal Lab podcast, where the deals get done. If you'd like to learn more, visit davesfreebook.com. And don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and review, and hit that subscribe button so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening.